This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's Monday, December 9th, 2019. Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on this brand new week, this latest edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Coming up on the Noon Business Hour, we will set up the week ahead. We will talk, go in depth on that deadline in the U.S.-China trade talks, and then we'll talk about the 400-pound gorilla in the streaming wars, that is Disney Plus, which shows no sign of slowing down. But right now on the Noon Business Hour, we'll talk about the Santa Claus rally and whether or not it actually exists. We welcome in Mark Hulbert, who is an investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com based in Washington. Mark, welcome back to the program. Can we say, yes, Virginia, there is a Santa Claus rally?
Well, actually, there is one to some extent, but believe it or not, it doesn't actually start until the day after Christmas. If you go back and look at the seasonalities in a rigorous way from the way a statistician would look at it, there really is no seasonal bias to the first 3 weeks of basically 3 weeks and a day or two of December. And so that really will come as a surprise, because if you're reading any of the financial press these days, you'll see everyone, it seems, is referring to a Santa Claus rally. But there's no rigor to it. Basically, anytime they think the market's going to go up, they'll call it a Santa Claus rally. But we have to remember, the market always gyrating. There always will be a rally in the fall, the spring, the summer. So this notion that somehow there is something special about the rally potential in the first couple of weeks of December is simply a story that Wall Street will tell. I'm cynical about it, of course. I think they're telling it as a way of trying to draw us into the market and, of course, generate more commission income for the brokers.
Well, it sounds like a term, Santa Claus rally, is similar to Black Friday in that 15 or 20 years ago, we all decided that the big shopping day after Thanksgiving actually had a technical term attached to it. And just as how Black Friday may not necessarily be the day that all the retailers go into the black for the year, the Santa Claus rally is open to interpretation.
Very much so. I mean, it's a, I think that it's in the eye of the beholder rather than than anything that has reality. What I've done is I've gone back and looked at the greatest amount of rally you could have gotten if you were lucky enough to get out at the high point of December. So in other words, you get in at the beginning of December and get out at the high. And then I compared that to every other month of the year. And it turned out there were something like four or five other months of the calendar that had greater rally potential than December. So, you know, if we were to be, we wanted to be statistical about this, we would be talking about an August rally, or we'd have to come up with something a lot catchier than that in order to compete with Santa Claus rally. But you get my point, is that there are other months have greater rally potential than December.
So really, since July 31st is the trade deadline in Major League Baseball, it would be the post MLB trade deadline rally. I mean, we're just throwing out ideas here, Mark. Someone else came up with a snappier name.
Right. I mean, I think that is exactly right. I mean, you know, it's very hard to compete from a marketing point of view with the notion of Santa Claus rally. I mean, who can compete with that? But nonetheless, that doesn't mean it has any statistical rigor.
Well, Mark, thank you very much for shedding some light on the existence of the Santa Claus rally. Mark Hulbert, investment columnist for the Wall Street Journal, Barron's, and MarketWatch.com, based in Washington, D.C. And stick around in August. We'll talk about the reality of the August rally in the stock market. Coming up next, the Disney Plus streaming service approaching a subscriber milestone. We'll also talk about set up the week ahead.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Disney Plus could have 20 million subscribers by the end of the year. That's according to analysts from Credit Suisse. Let's discuss the explosive growth of the streaming channel with Tom Lason, media analyst based in Seattle. Tom, welcome back to the program. Disney Plus went live in mid-November, so that means it could potentially generate 20 million subscribers over the course of just 6 weeks. In the history of any product rollout, can anyone develop, has any other entity either developed 20 million subscribers or 20 million customers in just 6 weeks?
Well, I'll make the political statement, Rob, and the answer is not that I'm aware of. So it's amazing, and you think to yourself, well, gee, you know, they double five or six more times in a year from now. Heck, they should dominate the world. But obviously, you get to a point of diminishing returns where it's like your golf game. You know, I can get you out of the hundreds and the 90s pretty quickly. The 80s is going to take some time, and the 70s is a lifetime. So they are going to reach a saturation at some point. But that is many moons away. You know, by the year 2024, with international growth and all those things, they're talking about, you know, massive numbers here in the terms of worldwide subs. So yes, the early move is impressive. I'm sure it'll probably slow down as more and more adopters, you know, come in and they start to aggregate, but it has been an impressive run here in this first month, no doubt.
Well, just goes to show you the power of intellectual property and having all of those different brands under one roof, because the Disney Plus content can please multiple constituencies. You've got Pixar movies for the kids. You've got Star Wars. You've got the Marvel Comics universe. You've got The Simpsons. Just so many different varieties of programming that appeals to so many different groups, and that seems to be the secret of their success.
Oh, yeah. You always say, well, you can't be all things to all people. Well, maybe you can be all things to all people. And what's interesting to me about this, too, is a phenomenon, which is kind of what we're talking about here, Rob, is that, you know, this is a service I think your kids will actually ask for by name. And we've had this Baby Yoda explosion here over the course of the past couple of weeks. It's just one example of this interlinking of the merchandise and a show like The Mandalorian. Yeah, it cost $100 million to make, but I'm starting to think, you know, let me just bounce this off you as an idea. I'm starting to think almost that streaming is almost serving as a sort of loss leader for Disney, in the sense of it's really what's tying you into more of a lifestyle sort of thing with anything from phones to e-commerce to theme parks. Those may really, at the end of the day, be the real revenue generators as opposed to $6.99 a month, because of all the synergies they do have. I know we hate that word, but I can't help but use it in the case of Disney Plus.
Well, Tom, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Tom Lason, media analyst in Seattle, Washington. You can find him on Twitter at Tom Lason, and he does have a point. If you really get a kick out of Baby Yoda in The Mandalorian, they're probably selling him at a gift shop at Star Wars Galaxy's Edge in Orlando.
Your daily transaction for useful information. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The countdown for tariffs on Chinese goods is rapidly approaching while the Federal Reserve begins a two-day meeting tomorrow. We're joined by Gary Kaltbaum, president of Kaltbaum Capital Management and a Fox News business contributor based in Orlando, Florida. Gary, welcome back to the program. That deadline for tariffs on Chinese goods is December 15th, and it would be a safe bet that one of the major cable news channels might actually put up a countdown clock as the week drags on towards December 15th. And if there's no real deal in this trade back and forth with China, you think we're actually going to get something done before the deadline, or is this going to keep going, drag on into 2020?
I actually think we're not going to get anything done near the deadline, except some words about we're getting closer, and President Trump will say China's my best friend. I do not think these tariffs will go on no matter what. I have to believe the White House recognizes if they do that, 500 to 1,000 Dow points, more uncertainty in the economy, that is going to be very important to his reelection. So my best guess, and I've been pretty much right over the last bunch of months when he keeps saying we're going to put on a tariff and they don't, I suspect they'll have some positive language. I'm not sure we're going to have a phase one deal done, though.
Well, when the jobs report came in on Friday and the markets took off, one of the pieces of analysis that came across the transom was that investors could react joyously to that jobs report in November because they weren't worried about the Fed's raising interest rates. With the Fed meeting this week, you got to imagine they're not going to take their foot off the gas going into an election year.
Oh, I can promise you they won't do that. And the important part of the equation on the Fed is I keep hearing that they're going to stop lowering rates, but they're actually printing more money now than Bernanke did when we had 9% unemployment. So the amount of liquidity going into the system now far exceeds back then, and I think that's what you're seeing a little bit in the market. But leave no doubt, that number last week was really strong, and 3.5% unemployment is just a great number for this country. The amount of people that are coming off welfare, great number. Minority numbers, great numbers. And keep your fingers crossed it continues, because somebody that didn't have a job yesterday that has one today, I'm not so sure. Just take a look at the smile on their face. It's usually a pretty darn good thing.
Very quickly, Gary, though, with fiscal stimulus happening at great recession levels, what would happen if there was an actual economic downturn? I mean, would the tools exist to fight it?
Well, they'll take us to negative rates like Europe is and Japan, and they'll probably raise the printing. I said years ago there is no a limit to how low they will go with rates or how high they will go to their what they call quantitative easing, and it looks like that's been correct. And it's not just here. It's even worse around the globe, as Europe, that has negative rates, is lowering them again, and that's been feeding the beast for a while. And I just worry about at the end of the day what happens, because we have $250 trillion of government debt right now, which has been enabled to a certain extent by all this easy money. So I'll keep my fingers crossed I'm wrong about that when the time comes.
Well, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Gary Kaltbaum of Kaltbaum Capital Management, based in Orlando. His website, GaryK.com.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. As the year winds down, it's important to take time and make some important financial moves. It's Stock Picker Monday. We'll get some suggestions from an investing pro. Plans for what was once the site of the Star Plaza Theater in Northwest Indiana have fallen through. And President Trump and his supporters launched fresh assaults on the House impeachment probe, which is what they dismiss as a hoax and a sham. WBBM Business, markets in negative territory. The Dow is down 76 points. The NASDAQ is down 14. The S&P 500 is down 5. AccuWeather says cloudy, breezy, mild with a passing shower or two. And a high today of 49. Tonight, mostly cloudy, turning sharply colder. A low of 18, a high tomorrow of just 25. Right now, we have 47 degrees at O'Hare, topping out at 49. WBBM News Time, 12:31. The Noon Business Hour continues, presented by the Village of Bedford Park. Markets are heading lower on this opening day of the trading week. We're joined by Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer, Greenwich Wealth Management, based in Greenwich, Connecticut. Vahan, welcome back to the program. How will 2019 end, at least as far as the financial markets are concerned? Is it all going to hinge on whether or not the U.S. Reaches some sort of trade agreement with China before new tariffs kick in on the 15th?
Well, I think 2019 will end a lot better than 2018 ended. If you remember, a year ago, we had a huge sell-off in December. We might see a little bit of volatility. Of course, everybody is on pins and needles right now, waiting to see if President Trump is going to impose more tariffs on the 15th, or what happens with China. But interestingly, I think the markets have become a little bit used to all of this uncertainty coming from the White House on the trade deals, and we're seeing less of a reaction than we were just a few weeks ago or a month ago or so. So I don't think we're going to see a huge sell-off on the 16th if we don't reach a deal on the 15th. But if we do see President Trump escalating things, then, we could see a lot more volatility.
Obviously, the trade saber-rattling brought uncertainty into the economic picture. Looking at the economy as a whole, and that is, someone with their retirement account, someone looking at their employment prospects, someone looking at their ability to pay the bills, has this been a story of a weakening economy in 2019 or a resilient economy in 2019?
Oh, I think the economy's been remarkably resilient. especially given all of the risks that it has faced. I'm actually surprised that the stock markets are near all-time highs, given all of the trade uncertainty, for example. So I think that's a sign of a resilient economy. In addition, we have a president who is very likely to be impeached, yet the stock markets are near all-time highs. And, you know, speaking of 2020, I do see some significant risks coming up next year. And, you know, trade is certainly one of them. You know, it's not just China. There is some talk right now that we may be very close to a trade deal with Canada and Mexico. But we are having trade issues with a lot of our allies, including many of the European countries. So I think that's a risk for 2020. I think politics is a risk, and not just the impeachment. You know, we have an election coming up, and if we see a Democrat who's very left-leaning really gaining traction, we could see a lot more regulation and taxes, and that would be very bad for the markets. And then finally, I think one of the biggest long-term risks that many people are ignoring for now is debt. Government debt is ballooning. Corporate debt is way up. On the one hand, this makes sense because interest rates are so low, but much of this debt is going to have to be rolled over in coming years. And if interest rates are much higher then, this could be a major stress on the economy.
Now, before I let you go, Vahan, I want to ask you about the legacy of former Fed Chairman Paul Volcker, who died at the age of 92. He was the Fed Chairman for Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan, raised interest rates to 20% in the early 80s to break the cycle of inflation, which dragged on the economy in the late 1970s. Your take on his legacy on the U.S. economy?
Oh, he's considered one of the best Fed chairmen we've ever had. You know, I was still a relatively young man when he was in the office, but we were just talking in the office today about Volcker and what he's done. And I recall back then when interest rates were very high, none of us ever thought that we would see mortgage rates as low as they are today. So he did a great job of stopping inflation. Many of the things he did were not popular at the time, but in hindsight, they turned out to be the right decisions.
And then what about his involvement in trying to end the Great Recession 10 years ago?
Yeah, well, of course, there's the Volcker Rule that everybody still talks about. So he's, you know, he has been a man with very big shoes, and I mean that literally as well.
Well, Vahan, thank you very much for joining us this afternoon. Enjoy listening to your insights, as always. Vahan Janjigian, Chief Investment Officer of Greenwich Wealth Management, based in Greenwich, Connecticut.
Making sense of your dollars. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The end of the year is rapidly approaching, but there's still some time to make some important financial decisions before 2020 arrives. We're joined by Mark Horner, Wealth Advisor, Fairhaven Wealth Management, based in Wheaton. Mark, welcome back to the program. And when we talk about some money moves that you can make before the end of the year, we're not talking about improving your financial position in your portfolio. We're talking about just some basic housekeeping that you can do before the calendar rolls over.
That's absolutely, Rob. And there's a couple that are specifically date sensitive, a couple of ideas to consider, and others that are just the end of the year is always a good time to get it done, but not necessarily tied to the end of the year. So those that are date specific include reviewing your contributions to your company 401k plan, especially if your employer offers a match, just to make sure that you don't leave any money on the table. I want to contribute at least as much to get a match that an employer offers. Otherwise, you're just passing up free money. Another one is if your employer offers a flexible spending account, or FSA, that helps pay for healthcare costs. Those plans vary, but some of them have a provision where if you don't use that money by the end of the calendar year, you lose it. So important to check with human resources on that. And then for anybody that's taking required minimum distributions, so sometimes referred to as RMDs, from a traditional IRA, it's important to process those correctly by the end of the year. The penalties for not doing so on RMDs are steep, so really important to double check. yeah, to double check that before the end of the year arrives.
When you talk about people on a mad dash to spend the rest of their FSA account money, people going out and getting new glasses and other things that are available to them using their FSAs, that's been known to happen. Some of your other suggestions: cleaning up your credit, prioritizing paying off high interest debt, and then setting up kind of a rainy day fund for any unexpected expenses. That sounds like a New Year's resolution as well.
Absolutely. So those aren't specifically tied to the 12/31 line in the sand, but a great time at the end of the year to think about the new year from a financial perspective. What went well this year? What could I improve on? And to take some action steps. And so you to make improvements. And you do mention a couple. And that's a reality for a lot of us. And so getting a plan together to reduce high interest cost debt, I think, is a great way to go. I think it's also just a reality that a lot of households use a divide and conquer approach to get all the things done that need to get done in a household, including finances. And so for the person that's in charge of the finances, make sure, I think, at least once a year, that your spouse or your partner is aware of how to get in touch with whether it's phone numbers or login information, how to get access to all your financial resources in case something happened to that person that's in charge of finances. You don't want to get hit by a bus and then find your partner or your spouse lost from a financial perspective.
Well, Mark Horner from Fairhaven Wealth Management, you can check out your website, fairhavenwealth.com. And, of course, you can check out your open house tomorrow at the company's new offices, 104 East Roosevelt Road. You're open from 10 to 6 p.m., and you say WBBM listeners are invited to stop by. So, Mark, I'll make sure that people come by and say hello.
Wonderful. Thanks, Rob.
Mark Horner, Fairhaven Wealth Management, based in Wheaton. Join us this time tomorrow for Travel Tuesday, and still to come, our Monday Stock Picker.
A deposit for your future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Stock Picker Monday, and we're joined by John Beaver, president of Phase 3 Advisory Services and registered principal with Royal Alliance Associates, based in Buffalo Grove. John, welcome back to the program, and your first stock pick of the week comes out of the financial sector.
It does. Hey, Rob, as we ring in the holiday season, we're banking on a lot of borrowing. So we have PNC Financial Services. Although they're considered a regional bank, they're one of the largest lenders, and we are continuing to see loan growth. The revenue and earnings continue to increase. And in fact, EPS growth has been over 7% per year, which is pretty good. And this has helped support rising dividends. Current dividend yield is about 3%. And they've actually been, just in the last 5 years, the dividend has increased from about 50 cents a quarter to recently here, $1.15 a quarter.
And PNC is, of course, their symbol is PNC. And the next one is Ring Central. And tell us a little bit about what their business happens to be.
Yeah, so this is not the doorbell that has those great commercials. This is actually a unified communications company, UCAAS. They offer cloud-based conferencing, chat, voice, all in one application for the workplace, becoming very popular as we become more mobile. And they have both small company and enterprise solutions. And these collaboration tools are great because it's all in one place, and they even have collaboration with AT&T and other companies. Apps like Dropbox and Zendesk can feed into this. So it continues to play to worker mobility, and as a result, they are gaining market share. And the point of all this is they're banking on you not leaving the platform once you're on it. So once you start bundling, it's really hard to leave. Just think Salesforce and what they've done. So we like this as a growth opportunity. The company's not making money yet, so earnings per share is still slightly negative. But they're continuing to build their users, which is really what they're shooting for, is to gain more market share and eventually make profits down the road.
And the symbol for Ring Central is RNG. And then very quickly, John, in your notes on PNC, when you talked about why the bank stocks are it's kind of in a good position right now, and that is because the fears of a recession have kind of gone down since a couple of months ago. Is that still the case?
It is. It's still the case. You know, it's interesting. I was just reading how the small investors have been pulling money out of the market this year, and yet the market continues to go up because there was this concern that we were going into a recession in 2020. It looks like that's going to be pushed off a little longer. We don't have to have a recession even in 2021. I think it depends more on which way the election goes and what comes about as a result of that, but 2020 looks okay. And we have a normal yield curve again. We had inverted slightly earlier this year, probably not due to really a recession, but due to other issues with the Fed. So that's looking fine, too. With a normal yield curve, that means banks can make money.
Well, thank you very much. John Beaver, president of Phase 3 Advisory Services and registered principal with Royal Alliance Associates based in Buffalo Grove. If you missed any part of today's show, you can go to our stream and just rewind at the time you want. We have a pause and rewind function that works both online and by updating the radio.com app.